Hey, welcome to Main Pod Girl.
This is a podcast made by pop heads for pop heads.
Every episode, y'all can check in with us while we discuss your burning questions, as well as what's happening in pop music.
Throughout this series, we'll be chiming in on our recent favorite discussion threads and diving into the latest pop emergencies.
What's up, everyone? I'm Sola. I'm an alt-pop R&B artist and songwriter, and your favorite co-host.
And I'm AJ Marks, and what do you know? I'm also an artist and songwriter. Maybe I'd be your favorite co-host, too, if Sola wasn't so damn charming.
Oh my god.
She doesn't know how to take a compliment.
We'll just do like a top five one day. I don't.
Yeah, top five co-hosts. We'll settle it, yeah. Oh my god, when neither of us win. Anyway, so we have one of my all-time favorite artists joining us today.
Same.
She's a Grammy award-winning singer and songwriter. She starred in films alongside Emma Roberts and Robin Williams. She sold 7 million albums before she could even vote. But most importantly, she's a masshole. Just like me. It's JoJo.
Hey!
Do you use the word masshole?
Yes. AJ, I didn't know you were a masshole as well.
Yes. I'm from Boxford.
Boxford?
Yeah.
Okay. There are so many towns in Massachusetts that I've never even heard of before.
Oh, I was afraid you were going to say this. It's right next to Tossfield and Middleton and Danvers.
Okay. I know all three of those because
exactly. Boxford just goes under the radar.
I'm so sorry. I performed at the Tossfield Fair when I was like 14.
We performed the same year.
Are you serious?
At Tossfield Fair. Yeah. I was at the end, like the stage when you first walk in.
I can see the venue right now because yeah. It's not something you see every day.
No. Yeah. I performed there a couple of different times. And I remember one of the years you were performing too. I didn't end up catching your set.
Well, you're a hater. That's fine.
Yeah. Canceled.
Canceled. Well, thanks for your support, AJ.
Do you go to the Tossfield Fair?
I've only been once, that one time that I performed.
Shame. Okay. We'll go to the Tossfield Fair.
My family is all in Foxborough. Well, they're scattered actually through, whether it's Boston, Foxborough, somewhere in Nashua, New Hampshire. And I actually just went back a couple weeks ago. I hadn't been since the pandemic. So it was cool. It was great to be back.
Ooh, okay. So I've never been to Massachusetts. If you were my tour guide, where would you take me?
Ooh, okay. So I haven't lived there in 10 years. So I feel like I am not the best equipped to be your tour guide. However, we'd land in Logan and then we'd stop at the legal seafood in the airport. We'd get to a clam chowder because you'd be hungry off the plane.
I love clam chowder.
Yes.
Yes to the clam chowder.
My favorite clam chowder. And then we go to, I'd say, let's get a place at the Liberty Hotel, which used to be a jail. And it's like one of the oldest jails in Boston.
We know what JoJo does for fun now.
Yeah. I stay at renovated jails. And yes. We'd stay there. That would be our central point. Then we'd walk to the garden. We'd take the tea there or whatever. I don't even know if the tea goes directly there. But then we'd go to the North End. We'd eat our way through Boston. We'd go to the North End. Then we'd go to Southie. So the North End is Italian food. Southie is the Irish section where I have a comfort zone. I love it there. The next day we'd go to Foxborough, which is where the Patriots play, which is where my family is. We'd go to the stadium.
Oh, wow.
That's a 2-day tour of Boston and Foxborough.
I like the idea of eating my way through Massachusetts.
Me too.
Sign me up, please.
Way through any city, really.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's the way to do it.
Have you ever been to Richardson's?
No. What's that?
The ice cream place? Ooh, okay. So many places I got to take you, Joe.
Yeah.
AJ, come on. Don't hold out on me.
Maybe I should be your tour guide.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, now that I'm all California-fied, my family's like, you've lost it. I mean, meaning like, you forgot where you came from. You don't even know how to get around here anymore. I'm like, I know.
You don't even say wicked anymore.
I do say wicked, especially when I go home. I do
yes.
say
wicked. Okay.
I promise.
Nice. Good.
She's certified masshole now.
Certified. I still got my mass ID. Don't tell the California police, but yeah.
Right.
Let's start off with our usual icebreaker. What's everyone been listening to recently?
I will go first. I have been listening. This is going to be also a very boring decision just because this is what everyone has been doing. But I have just been listening to so much Sour, Olivia Rodrigo's new album. It is so good. I'm so impressed. Every aspect of it, I think, is so cool. And yes, we love Olivia Rodrigo.
She is amazing. I think she's phenomenal. I can't believe how young she is and like which is so impressive, like you said.
Like, it literally starts, like, the first song, it opens, and she goes something like, I want it to be a little messy. And, like, I just love that intro because it's, like, I would never expect that from, like, a Disney star. You know what I mean? To have it to be, like, messy.
I think that's so good. And like, that's what's great about that age group is that they're not obsessed with perfection or that wasn't put on them like it was, for example, 10 years ago.
AJ, what have you been listening to?
What I'm listening to now, Jack Newsom came out with an EP. Oh, fucking incredible. I don't know if you know Jack Newsom. He went to Berkeley, so he's also kind of a masshole, an adopted masshole.
Okay.
He is like kind of like Charlie Puth-esque. Like, he has this very interesting voice. He was on that TV show, Songland, the one where it's like The Voice, but for writing.
I love that show.
Yeah. Mm. So he wrote for Meghan Trainor, I think, in that episode.
Oh.
He's very good.
He's incredible.
I mean, if you're comparing him to Charlie Puth, I know he's great because Charlie is a genius and got that Berkeley energy. And
yeah, another adopted masshole.
Mm-hmm. Then also another person from a TV show, Loaded Gun by Hunter Metz. He was just on American Idol and he was robbed. He did not win. But I just think his voice is so amazing. And he covered so many songs I love on that show, like July by Noah Cyrus, Thinking of You with Katy Perry, which is her best song. So,
oh my God, I saw that performance. I loved that performance.
So you know Hunter Metz.
I guess I do. I didn't know that I did, but when I was back in Boston, I watched that duet between them when Katie was on her guitar.
Yeah.
And pulled out like that, because that's from her first album.
Yes.
Where they did like the period piece video where she was like a military wife, right?
Yes, exactly. And I cried. Oh. I sobbed at that video.
I sobbed at that video too. And I loved this duet. I was really moved by it.
And then Joe, what are you listening to?
Okay, so I have been banging the repeat on Lucky Day's duet album, which is called Table for Two.
Yes.
Ooh.
So Lucky was nominated for like a zillion Grammys. I think it was two years ago. And he just keeps putting out amazing music with D-Mile as the main producer, who just won like Grammy for Song of the Year and also the Oscar for Song of the Year with her. And so I'm so happy for them. And I just can't get enough of this duet album.
I mean, the features, Yeba.
Yeba is, woo! I mean, can't say enough great things about Yeba. Yeba, Ari Lennox.
Yes.
Mahalia. Tiana Major 9.
Yes, who I love. Like,
yeah, she's sick.
Some great singers on there. I just can't get these songs out of my head. So that's what I've been listening to a lot. And then I got my peaches out in Georgia. Let us sit. So
is it the new remix with Usher and Snoop Dogg and Ludacris?
Yes. Speaking of Ari Lennox duets, how about the one between her and motherfucking Jasmine Sullivan?
Yes.
Speaking of things I'm listening to, her Hotels. I can't get enough. It's the perfect length of, you know, number of songs. Clearly, if you guys listen to my last album, you know I like a succinct body of work that you just like can listen to over and over again. And I love Hotels so much. That record between her and Ari makes me feel a certain way. She's talking about sitting on it, talking about you deserve it, talking about what are you going to do to make me want to sit on it. It's great. It's just great.
And going into Ari Lennox collabs and Lucky Day collabs, there's also Kiana Layde. She had both of them on her album. Do you know Kiana?
I love Kiana. Hold on just 1 second. I'm so sorry. Ma, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Hi, Mom.
I'm going to tell you the truth. So I texted my mom. I'm like, Mom, I just got my period. I don't have any tampons here. Could you please grab me some? So she grabbed me some. She just brought me some.
Oh, my God. Oh, MVP. I love that.
Yes, truly.
But yeah, so Kiana Layde.
She's a star. I love her. Her voice is amazing. She's so sexy. She's a great writer. I'm so into
her. All of the above. I can't wait to see her like blow up.
Me too.
It's also so rare to get like an indigenous pop star. Like,
wait, she is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know her background.
See, I know that only because I know all the indigenous pop stars because I am also indigenous. So like,
oh wow. Indigenous American.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go down a Google rabbit hole and learn more.
Yeah. anyway, so we should probably move on to the next segment.
Yes.
So similar to you, but obviously to a much lesser extent. I was releasing music professionally at 10 years old and playing gigs all around the world as a kid. And often I felt like the narrative of my story is always told by the flashy successes and what other people want to see. But like, we wanted to give you the opportunity to tell the story of your career the way that you experienced it and the way that you see it. That's why today we're introducing a new segment on Main Pod Girl. It's Good to Know JoJo. That's where guests, regardless if they're JoJo or not, you just happen to be JoJo, take us step by step through JoJo's career from their perspective.
Yes.
Okay. Reclaiming the narrative.
Yes, exactly. We have six like eras
that we've defined.
Okay.
The first era is the lead up to getting signed. So this is all before Leave, Get Out.
You're a literal child.
Yes, a baby.
Take it back,
a fetus.
Bring it back. Yes.
When do you think the real start of your career was? Or what do you consider the real start of your career?
My first theater performance was when I knew I really wanted to do this forever as a career. I played Tommy in The Who's Tommy in Foxborough at the Orpheum Theater. And I was like, I love this. I want to do this all the time. And then I started doing like commercials and things of that nature, local stuff for like, AJ, I know you know Hood Milk.
Yes.
You know, so I did like something for that. I don't know if it exists or if it ever came out, but I know I did it. Got the check. All right. And
that's what matters.
I went to a Kiss 108 concert because I won tickets through listening on the radio. Kiss 108 is our local pop station.
Hell yeah, it is.
And I was very precocious, as I'm sure you were as well, because to be a quote unquote child star, you've got to have a lot of energy and just have drive, really, I think, because I wasn't pushed into it. I really had such a strong desire to be a singer and to be a star. And I sang my way from one security guard to the next with my mom. Obviously, she let me do this. I was like, I want to meet whoever I can meet backstage. And Britney Spears was on her first album. She had just, maybe on her second single. And I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And I went from security guard to security guard singing. I don't remember what I sang, but I was dressed very colorfully. And I ended up meeting Britney Spears. And she had one of her dancers, TJ Espinoza, actually, who now I know as an adult out in LA. And he was filming me sing. And then they sent it to Larry Rudolph. Larry and Britney were starting a production company and they asked me to be their first signee. Maybe I was 9 or 10. I don't know, but I was around that at that age. My mom was like, no, I'm like, you're trying to ruin my life. You don't want me to win. And then, anyway, after that, I'd had a couple other production deals offered until I was 12 years old. And I begged my mom to let us move out of Foxborough and somewhere else where I would not be so bullied. And my mom bet on me and allowed me to pursue my dream. We moved out to LA for a few months and I did a TV show out there called America's Most Talented Kids. I lost to a violinist. Once again, thought my life was over, but someone in the audience was like, I think you're amazing. Let me introduce you to people. And introduced me and my mom to Vincent Herbert, who then took us around to different labels. There was interest from different places, but we ended up signing with Black Round, which is a label that was started for Aaliyah by her uncle. And Aaliyah had passed a few years prior, tragically, on that plane crash. And they were trying to find their way as a family and as a label, you know, recovering from that. And the rest is history after that.
How old were you when you recorded Leave, Get Out?
I was 12.
Okay, first of all, ridiculous performance for a 12-year-old.
Thank you.
How did that song come to find you, or you come to find that song?
I don't know exactly how it came to be my song, but Vincent Herbert was executive producing my album. And I'm sure, just like with the other songs, was going to different producers, seeing what songs they had that might be a good fit for me. I really saw myself as an R&B singer, and I didn't feel that that song was R&B. So I liked the song and I cut it, but I didn't think that it would make the impact around the world that it did. I thought it was more quote unquote pop than who I was. It's funny also people's categorization of that song, you know, that some people feel like that is R&B or some people feel like it is pop, or it's just all so personal. the way we see things and hear things.
I was going to say that takes us to our next era, which is your first two albums.
When did your interest in vocal production start? And at what point were you comfortable enough to start incorporating that into your own work, like your vocal production?
It started as a collaboration between me and whoever was officially vocal producing something. But even as early as my first album, I was given freedom to express my ideas and they liked my ideas. So that made me feel good. That encouraged me in the direction of continuing to try.
I love that.
And somewhere along the line, you know, as a writer or as a vocal producer, different things can happen where you feel more or less encouraged or discouraged. But I remember in that first album feeling pretty empowered. So mostly just learning, particularly in the first album, watching how people did things and being like, oh my God, that is so cool. Like learning about stacking. I didn't know any of this stuff. I could hear harmonies, but I didn't know, okay, do the third of this and do a third and a fifth. And the Underdogs taught me so much about that. Like James Fauntleroy and Eric Dawkins and Harvey Mason Jr., who's now in the, I think he's the head of the Grammys. Incredible people behind the scenes that challenged me and showed me and set a standard for me as to how I like to treat vocals.
I feel like so many people might assume that because you were so young and because you were a girl in the pop music industry in like 2004, 2006, I can imagine a lot of people think you might not have that much autonomy or might not have that much like ability to do things. So the fact that you felt listened to and heard, that seems really special.
It was really special. Particularly the first album was so much fun. And so was the second one, but it was so fun because it really felt like I was doing this with like big brothers, family. It was amazing. And I was learning so much. And I did get to be like, I like this. I don't like this. Because I was still figuring out what I liked and who I was. Of course, there were things that were like impressioned upon me. I don't think it was anything negative. You know, I appreciate how I was being formed and shaped. And it was just a enhancement of how I came to them. Because before you start writing your own songs or singing other people's songs that are original, you're singing covers. So it was interesting to find that identity. And something that did concern me, even as I was like going into the second album, and particularly as I was making a third album, the Jumping Trains album, that didn't end up coming out. But I was like, I feel like I've been made to be this angsty teen and I'm like not angsty. So I will say that I felt like that was put on me and I'm like, I'm so happy. Like I'm not angsty, you know? So that was something that was, I felt was because I was associated with Leave Get Out and then with Too Little Too Late. It's like, this bitch is constantly getting cheated on. Like this girl is just having a rough go of it.
And a sassy. I love the idea of you being able to, even as a kid, have that control.
Yeah. You know, whether it was perceived control or actual control, because sometimes people can just do a good job of making you feel like it's your idea. And I don't know. I don't even know. It was so exciting until you're in that situation. You can't prepare for it and you don't know what it's like until you're in it. But I look back on it fondly. I do.
Also, I learned that you were offered a role on Hannah Montana.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I really don't remember, but I just remember my mom talking about it and people like to run with that now that I was offered Hannah Montana. I don't know if it was a real offer. I don't know if it was just a conversation. I don't remember.
Interesting.
I would not have done it justice like Miley Cyrus did. It wouldn't have worked. It like would not have worked. So I'm so glad that they didn't go with me because I would have tanked it.
Also, I'm sure they would not have pushed you as an R&B singer on the show.
Exactly.
That's true.
You would have been pop rock.
It would have been hard for me to break out of that. And she's done it seamlessly and transitioned in probably the illest way possible. I think she's fucking phenomenal. I'm obsessed with Miley.
Yeah, we love Miley.
This new incarnation of Miley is turning me on. I love her. But I wouldn't have done it. Like, I would have felt boxed in. I would have felt... And I don't come from... a musician family. I don't come from a family like people who have done it before. So I probably would have just gone into a shell of myself and like not handled it well.
So just when it comes to these first albums, like when you listen back to them now, what do you think of?
I think of chipmunks. I sound like a chipmunk.
I totally disagree. agree. What? I mean, well, your voice is definitely higher.
I appreciate that. Yeah, my voice was definitely, I mean, I was prepubescent, like, definitely in the first album. Also, when I listened to the first two, I'm like, this content is so grown. It was so inappropriate. I can't believe that people were writing these songs for me. And
yeah, like that?
Yeah, like that was very grown. It feels very sensual. And I like that now, but it's just interesting how grown it was. And I feel bad for my mom because I was like, Ma, it's fine. And she's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And
like, oh, so she actually had pushback on that.
My mom did have pushback on it, but I'm sure she just felt outnumbered and like, you know, it was overwhelming. It was really overwhelming during that time for her, for sure. And I loved all the stuff and I wanted to be grown and I wanted to stuff my bra with, you know, tissue and fake like little silicone padding and stuff.
I had the biggest push-up bra, so I feel that.
Okay, so now we're going to go into the next era.
Okay, oh shit. It's getting dark now.
it gets a little bit dark. So this is your legal battles, but I kind of want to focus more on the mixtapes.
Perfect.
You chose to express your voice through the mixtapes while you were being silenced by your contract. What do you feel the mixtapes accomplish for you emotionally, spiritually, creatively?
If I wasn't able to put out music during that time, I don't know what would have happened with me personally. I was so depressed and discouraged, and I didn't see a way out of the situation I was in where my label wasn't functioning anymore and they wouldn't allow me to release things officially. So being able to take a page out of the book that I saw what rappers were doing, putting mixtapes out 10 years ago, or yeah, I think it was 10 years ago that I put out my first mixtape. It was out of necessity. And it was something that I really just saw men in hip hop doing. So I was like, let me take a page out of this book and put it out, just put it out through SoundCloud or Bandcamp. I think that's where we put them up. And it meant a way for me to connect with my fans and to feel really supported by the producers and writers that I was working with. I really was so grateful that they allowed me to put that stuff up. And knowing that it wasn't going to get the mainstream push or the major label push because my label wasn't functioning. And knowing that millions of people were listening and supporting in a way that they weren't necessarily used to consuming my music, it kept me alive because I was so, so depressed and I didn't know what was going to be next for me. So I'm like eternally grateful for those mixtapes, for the support that I got on them from my fans.
One of my favorite songs of yours is Glory from your Valentine's mixtape on SoundCloud. This song really flexes your vocal chops and it's so
ridiculous vocal performance.
Yes. Oh, ridiculous. That was the moment I was like, oh shit,
she's doing it.
It's so different from everything else in your discography and your vocal approach is so different as well. Like, what was the story behind that cover? Like, why specifically that song?
That's all thanks and praise to Stevie Mackey, which if you love vocals, you probably know Stevie Mackey. He is absolutely phenomenal. There's videos of us just singing and jamming at his house for Taco Tuesday. And he has some of the greatest singers pop through his house to eat tacos and drink and commiserate and harmonize with one another. And he had sang me that song a lot and he was like, I would love to hear you sing this song. And I was like, do you think I could sing this song? And do you think that would be okay? Because it's an old spiritual from back in the day, an African-American spiritual. And he was like, I think it would be amazing if you sang the song. So with his blessing, he helped me with it and he accompanied me on piano. And it's something we did, you know, we just practiced it and then really sang it down and closed my eyes. And that song is so transcendent. There's something very spiritual about it. So I'm glad you love that one. I love it too. It's such an amazing song. And I wouldn't have known it. I wouldn't have known about it if it weren't for Stevie.
Do you ever think that you would dip into that gospel style again?
Yeah, why not? Absolutely. I think so.
Please do.
And I think I'd like to collaborate with gospel artists. And I mean, gospel has been so influential in R&B and in country, the relationship between R&B, soul, country, gospel, you know, they're forever linked and a part of our American history. And I love to explore all of that. Another thing about this era is when I put out my remix to Marvin's Room, that was a bit of a game changer for me because so many people heard it and loved it. And it caught a lot of people's attention and helped bridge the gap between me as a teenager, you know, a teenage artist, a child star, into a more adult space. And I guess I was scorned and I was angsty on this song again. So here I was perpetuating the angsty girl narrative, but that was exciting for me because it was also more of the direction that I wanted to move in as far as a more R&B and experimental space.
Well, that's a perfect segue into this next era.
Yeah, the Tringle and Mad Love.
This was obviously like when you reestablished yourself, you know, as an artist, you weren't the same person that you were 10 years ago. So now the universe gets to see you as you are. So what was your goal for this kind of like reintroduction period?
To be honest, I was kind of a shell of myself at that point. I was really still a bit shell-shocked from the legal battle and from things going on in my personal family life that I don't speak about because it's just, I don't like to share things that aren't mine to share, but it was really taking a serious toll on me. And I was in survival mode. So I immediately signed a new contract after getting out of the one with my former label. And then there were things going on, music industry politics, that I once again kind of fell into. And I didn't get as much of the chance to do exactly what I wanted to do with that album. And I didn't have any more fight in me, if that makes sense. So I feel like I made a few compromising decisions as far as saying yes to songs that I didn't in my spirit love. And I didn't know how to say no at that time. I didn't feel empowered. I felt really scared because it had been so long since I had put out music. I was very well aware of people's short attention spans because I too have a short attention span. And I really wanted to get music out there. And when I was being told, this is what will work, this is what you got to put out, I didn't have the energy to go against that.
I was going to say, Mad Love strays the furthest from R&B amongst all your albums.
I think the Tringle strays furthest from R&B.
You're right.
There are some elements of R&B, I think, in Mad Love, but like When Love Hurts, Say Love, Save My Soul. I think Say Love is a great song. I love Save My Soul as well. But I really didn't care for When Love Hurts. I'm embarrassed to say that I compromised in that way. But I also believe that relationships are about compromise. So when you're in a major label deal, you don't just, it's not a dictatorship on either side. Anyway, so I learned a lot through that process of what I can live with and what I can't. And I'm proud of Mad Love. I'm really proud of Mad Love. It made a huge impact for me and it allowed me to reconnect with my fans. So I'm not speaking negatively about it, but mostly about like When Love Hurts. So I was like, how is this my reintroduction? You know?
Yeah. Cause that was the first song on it too, but I think it's the least streamed on it.
When Love Hurts.
Yeah.
Good.
The lyrics of Reckless, particularly that song, are so haunting and ridiculously honest. I don't know if it's about a real life situation, but like Music is another track with like immensely powerful lyrics. Like you were talking earlier about how in the first era, you bet your life on music. You bet everything on music. You bet your move on music. Your mom bet on you. These might not be some of them, but from a songwriting perspective, what are the songs that you're most proud of?
Thank you for highlighting those. Reckless, to your point, was absolutely about a real situation. And that song came from a stream of consciousness, right? So I don't know if you've ever done this, but this is a cool exercise sometimes to just start writing and not take your hand off the keyboard or off the page for like 10 minutes and just see what happens. And then highlighting things that are interesting. And sometimes I end up even stream of consciousness writing things that kind of sound poetic or sound, in my opinion, cool. So I will just highlight those things and then distill it down and kind of start coming up with a song. And I felt I was feeling really guilty about this relationship that I was thinking about, where I was a mess. What else is new? And this person was like an angel. And I was just like thinking about his new relationship and how he was about to marry her. And I'm like, I just feel so bad for the way that she probably had to repair him from all the things I did, all the bullshit I put him through, because I was so in pain. And hurt people. So that's where that came from. And then music, my father had just passed away. I mean, I was in the studio shortly after that. And thank God for Justin Tranter and Haley Warner that we were able to have a conversation. I was really emotional, as you would be. They helped me shape this feeling, this emotion, and put it into a song.
It's so powerful. Like, music specifically, I think it made me cry, like, the first time I heard it.
Oh, thank you.
Moving on to the next era.
Good to know. So what this segment is named after.
Okay. I have a bone to pick with you for taking up all the music I listened to last year, because you released the equivalent of like 4 albums. Like, goddamn. And then not to mention like the amount of features and like stray singles you dropped during that time too. To what do we owe this overflow of creativity?
You are so funny. I just felt really free. I felt really unafraid to put myself out there, and I felt confident, and I changed some things in my team, and I just felt more in control. And I think that we were operating from a place of fear a little bit and being like, well, if it's not perfect, then it can't come out. And that's no fun. Like, perfection does not exist. I think the generation that's come up after me does the best job of just not being precious with their material. So I didn't want to be precious. I just wanted to put music out into the world and keep moving forward. So with that spirit, I released Good to Know and the acoustic version of it, and then the deluxe version, Christmas album. And then I did some collaborations as well. And it was really a good thing for me just to take some of that fear away of like, if it's not the greatest thing ever, if it's not absolutely perfect, then it can't come out. Like, fuck that. Just do what you do.
So I know that for this album, like, I was so excited when I saw that you had linked up with Lido, because Lido is like personally my favorite like producer and one of my favorite artists.
Solo's the Lido stan.
Yeah. We've talked about him actually a bunch on this podcast because I don't stop talking about him. And for those that haven't listened to the pod yet, he works a lot with sort of like alternative, kind of more experimental sounds and songs within pop, R&B, and rap. So how did you link up with him? And are you planning to do more of that sort of like sound? Because Pedialyte, yes, please, more.
Linked up with him through Aaron Bashuk, who is the president of Warner and who I've worked with for a few years at different labels. And like, we just have a great working relationship and we believed in each other for a long time. And so he thought that Lido would be a good fit for me. And after I looked at like his catalog, I was, can't help but agree. I think it'd be great. So we got in, and the first thing that we did together was a song called Think About You, which is on Good to Know, which is one of my favorites.
So gorgeous.
Thank you. He just started playing these chords and I was like, ooh, you fucked up now, Lido. I'm never going to let you go. And we have so much fun. We love music. We come from a similar place of just like being a music nerd and how soul music changed our life and how hip hop has such a huge influence on us. And we actually have a song together on his album called, his album is Peter. And we have a song called University. I just love working with him and just trying things. And it's just such a fun, safe space. He's such a good friend and such a great encourager. And I hope we collaborate until we die. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those for me. That's my homie.
And I love that news, because that's what I was hoping you would say.
That's my friend for real. I fuck with Leto so heavy. He's such a great person.
Okay, so the era, at least in my mind, started with Joanna and Sabotage.
Yes.
What made you decide not to put them on the album?
The lack of streams on Sabotage made me decide not to put it on the album. Oh. To be honest with you, which is so fake of me, but I'm going to keep it real with you guys. Honestly, I was bummed with the rollout for Sabotage. If it was rolled out a little bit better, then I might have put it on the album. But I wanted to come in with fresh new energy for Good to Know. And I wanted, specifically because I knew I was going to keep it to a small number of songs, I wanted my fans to have completely new material. So I'm being kind of facetious with saying that it was because of, you know, streams, but it was because I wanted total newness and I wanted my fans to feel like, well, she's only giving me 9 songs. I've already heard 2 of them. So I felt like there was no reason why Joanna and Sabotage couldn't live on their own.
Speaking of Joanna, that line about your acting career is so fucking bold. That line specifically always sticks out to me every time I listen to it. Is acting even in your field of vision at the moment?
I think about it, actually. I do think about it, but I have to prove myself in that area. I can't just expect to knock on Hollywood's door and be like, hey guys, I'm ready for you now. Like,
you mean Confessions of a Starlet didn't give you a free pass?
No, it didn't give me like an eternal pass into just doing whatever I want. So it's something that I do miss, and actually I help my actor friends sometimes audition for roles, and I'll like be their scene partner and I'll like record them doing their thing. And I'm like, you know, I do kind of miss this as I'm reading scripts with them and getting them prepared for their things. I do miss it. So my agent knows that. So I'm not in a rush to do something random. I want to do something cool. So who knows?
If you had to pick, would you be like doing a Ryan Murphy show? Would you be doing like a Jordan Peele film?
You just named like the 2 people that I would die to work with.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
Like the biggest, most creative people.
I could totally see you on Spring Queens.
Yeah, me too. So I think that shit would be dope.
Right. We'll contact your agent.
Thank you. You guys are visionary.
Yeah. This kind of leads into the next segment because we're in your new era. You know, we're here now, present day. You've just done The Masked Singer.
Yes.
Yes. Return to TV, sort of, behind a mask. So would you ever do reality TV, like ever?
I could not imagine myself on reality television. I mean, since I was a teenager, I've been offered different situations with reality TV. I'm interested in getting into the cooking space, into baking. I'm a huge advocate of the life-changing benefits of incorporating more plants into your diet. So I call myself plant-based, even though I'm not perfectly vegan, but you know, I'm hugely into making plants delicious and freaking people out with how delicious they can be. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would do reality. But never say never, because I never thought I would do The Masked Singer.
And now it's over. Look where we are.
I know.
You've already done it. Second place.
Been there, done that.
You were robbed, though. Let's be real.
Honestly.
You guys, Nick Lachey beat me. It's okay. It is what it is.
It's not okay, but, you know, it's okay. So your latest single, you know, has you self-admitting that you are a creature of habit. So what are some of your biggest bad habits?
Well, I am addicted to caffeine.
Tragic.
And I have now forced myself to have a big glass of water before I have a coffee. So that's getting better. But my habits are sabotaging relationships and freaking out when things get too serious. So that is what I'm actively working against in therapy and in just being a grown-up.
And in songwriting.
And in songwriting, exactly.
So is that for like a new project? Is that like the next album?
So I am putting out a new project in the fall, and that's going to be focused around my different shades of anxiety and depression. And I felt like I could not get to my next album if I didn't do a capsule project about how despondent and confused and broken I felt at the end of last year. And that's because of a relationship that was ending, and because I didn't know who I was as an artist, if I was even good at it anymore. I've been on such a sliding scale of self-esteem. And I know I'm not alone in that. I mean, it's just being a human being on this planet at this time is very strange. and especially with social media and comparison. And so I'm definitely not at all exempt from that. So Creature of Habit is the first song in this new era. And it's going to remain to be seen what will be on this new project that's coming in the fall. It's called Trying Not to Think About It.
Well, hopefully more Lido, but besides Lido, are there any other like producer crushes of yours that you're eyeing for your next project?
D-Mile is my ultimate producer crush. I love him so much. And that is my buddy as well. Like Lido and D-Mile are my pals, my guys. I'm so proud of them and the success that they're having. And I love Diesel, who works with Jasmine Sullivan a lot. This girl in Nashville named Savannah Santos.
Ooh, I don't know her.
She's so dope. She and her band have this song called Fuck 2020.
Oh, her. She
is so talented. I feel like she's going to take over the world one day.
You sang The Change, which was the official campaign song for President Joe Biden. So I just want to say thank you for single-handedly helping him get elected.
Least I could do.
And also actually with American Mood being, you know, kind of political, socially aware, are you going to be throwing your hat into any more conversations like that coming up? Like seeing that this side of JoJo a little bit more?
That remains to be seen. I don't know. I never saw myself as somebody who was political. And yet I realized that by believing a certain way, aligning myself with different causes, or even just believing my friends and believing in them and believing in equality and justice, that innately is political. So I really came to learn that in the past few years. But I don't know. I don't know what will come next. I'd like to get out of my own ass and stop just writing about like what I'm thinking and how I'm such a mess, and you know, do things that are not just about myself, because life is about more than myself. So that being said, who knows?
You know, the more you talk, the more I actually hear the accent.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, when you said the word father, I was like, oh, okay.
Father. Did I say father?
You said father. Yeah. Oh.
So we're going to move on to our next segment, which is questions for the culture. So this is where we discuss a discussion question. So this week's discussion question comes from user Artificial Locomotion, who asks, what do you think will be the signature song of today's pop stars? So the likes of Rihanna, Lady Gaga. By signature song, I mean the one that they will be most remembered for in 15 plus years to come. So
let's start with Drake. What would his signature song be?
Damn! You guys, that is so hard. Nobody has more hits than Drake. Literally, just Drake and Mariah Carey. What?
Yeah.
I don't... One Dance?
I know, that's the one that I'm hearing in my mind. But I'm like, yeah. Is that true?
Started From the Bottom wasn't as big of a hit at the time.
Yeah, that's more like memed.
I think it might be One Dance, because I'm thinking of like, Kiki, do you love me? It's not that. Even that's, you know, all of them are great. What about...
Hotline Bling?
Right, Hotline Bling, but...
Nice For What?
Nice For What, right. Could it be Nice For What? No.
I feel like it has to be One Dance.
I think One Dance was the biggest, most global. It was... It had different influences in it, and it really set off, like, I'm going to go with One Dance. I agree with you, Sola.
All right. Thank you.
I'm going to go for Hotline Bling, I think. Because I just think Hotline Bling, I'm picturing the music video. I don't think I can picture the music video for One Dance. And usually signature songs are very visual.
Good point. Iconic imagery, thanks to Director X.
Wow. Coming out with the knowledge here, JoJo.
Okay, what's Bruno Mars's signature song?
Locked Out of Heaven.
Ooh.
I feel like Uptown Funk was his biggest song.
But would it be...
Oh my God. 24 Karat.
But then That's What I Like was bigger, wasn't it?
Yeah. I feel like 24 Karat sticks in your head more, but That's What I Like was a much bigger song.
Was it?
I think so.
Guys, I think you're wrong.
I feel like it has like...
Hit number one, right?
A billion, yeah, streams, and it's just like...
And 24 Karat did it?
No.
I don't think so.
Play is over. Piggy, finger, to the moon. Ooh. I mean, that's a forever song. That is a forever record.
Yes.
But we're not even going to consider Just the Way You Are, Grenade, Treasure, none of those.
No, I don't think you can.
What about Uptown Funk?
Was that bigger? Uptown.
I feel like it might have been bigger.
I think that was his biggest song, right?
I think that's the question, though. Like, is the signature song defined by, like, what the fan base likes or what the entire world likes? Do you know what I mean? Because those can be different.
I think Uptown Funk took him into a different stratosphere of his career because it was Uptown Funk, then 24 Karat Magic. I think it defined his... He was already a superstar, but this put him in a legendary category. I think that Uptown Funk will be the defining song for Bruno Mars.
You know, I'm going to agree with you as well.
Joanna, you and I got to stream 24 Karat Magic 30 million more times so we can get it to 1 billion streams. Yeah.
Wow.
30 million between the two of us? I feel like we could do it.
Me too, I think.
We'll bring Soleil in on this. That way, you know, it gets there faster.
Exactly. Okay, what about Rihanna?
Oh my God. You were talking about Drake and Mariah having a lot of hits. I think Rihanna's up there too.
I feel like it has to be Umbrella. Not because that's representative of Rihanna that we know, but I feel like that was maybe the song that cemented her as an icon.
Did, 100%. I think so.
Another visual song. I think in my heart, it's Work, but I know that's not how everyone else feels. And I know that was a massive song, but I feel like that was so late in her career that I don't know if it's her signature.
My heart wants it to be Pondé Replay just for nostalgia, but I know that's not true.
There's Diamonds too. Diamonds was a big song, but I don't know if it's like the Rihanna song. I would say, yeah, probably Umbrella.
Not Love the Way You Lie?
Ooh.
How about Disturbia?
Disturbia. Yeah.
See,
oh my God.
I wanted to be that too, but also no.
I'm kidding.
It was a bop though.
Work is a great one to throw in there too as a possible definitive song. But just the impact that Umbrella had, the way it bust the world open and really was like, I'm not going anywhere. I am that bitch.
Exactly.
So I think it's Umbrella.
And it came out in summer of 2007, which apparently was like the rainiest summer Britain has ever had.
The way she did that?
Her impact.
She changed the weather. AJ, what of her songs has the most streams though? Because you're on the interwebs right now, right?
I am on the interwebs. Her most streamed song, at least from what I can tell from her top 10, is Work. But
Interesting.
Umbrella is her number one in her top 10.
But Umbrella's pre-streaming era.
Yeah, Umbrella's pre-streaming era, and it already has 0.6 billion. So for Work to only have 1 billion, I don't know. I think...
Right, it's Umbrella.
I feel like it has to be Umbrella.
Yep.
We've settled it. Okay, one more. Beyonce.
Beyonce. Again, this is not indicative of like her entire artistry, but I do think Single Ladies bust the door open for her, like... in a just even in a higher way, even though she had already had Irreplaceable and Crazy in Love. Oh man, no, you know what? The song she'll be remembered for, the definitive song, will be Crazy in Love.
But what about Love on Top?
Do you remember the video for Love on Top?
Slightly. No, not really.
Do you
really
remember the video for Crazy in Love?
I don't.
You don't?
I remember Single Ladies.
Yeah.
What about Halo?
Halo was a good one, too. When I think of Beyonce, I think of Formation initially.
Because
that should be her signature song. That should be what she's remembered for, because that is the most Beyonce song to me.
Oh, you're so right.
But then also Partition. Partition's also the most Beyonce song, but Partition wasn't even like a hit.
She said, I don't want you seeing Beyonce on her knees.
Oh my God. Okay. I think actually, now that we've been through all this, I might go with Single Ladies, even though a part of me feels it might be Love on Top just because of like how iconic that ending is. But everyone knows that dance. Everyone knows the Single Ladies dance. All you need to do is this and people know what you're doing, you know, moving my hand back and forth and back and forth.
it's true. Actually, people know what you're doing. I think that's going to stay with our generation though. But I feel like Love on Top is going to transcend our generation. I feel like people will carry that song, like musicians, because vocalists die for that song. I feel like they'll carry it.
How many times does she modulate?
7, I think.
It should be illegal.
All right. Google says 4. 4?
4?
Feels like more than 4.
We'll say 7.
It feels like 7. Now it is time for our top 5. Because you are one of my favorite vocal powerhouses, and because I know that you appreciate a lot of vocal powerhouses, I feel like we got to do vocal powerhouses for our top 5 this week.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love this conversation. Yes.
AJ, you go first.
I will start off by saying this was incredibly hard to make. Very tricky, especially because we made a rule that we can't include JoJo. So my number 5, I fucking adore this woman so much. I want her on the podcast one day. Mary J. Blige. Oh, incredible. I'm going down. Talking about Be Happy. You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. Ooh.
Be Without You.
Be Without You. Yes. Number 4 is Kelly Clarkson.
Ooh,
she
yes.
won American Idol because of her vocals.
The tone, the clarity.
Yes. And she can do like any genre with that voice, any genre. Number 3, I think you just collaborated with her. Her name is Tori Kelly.
My girl.
If it rings a bell.
Yes. Yeah, that's my babe. I love her so much.
Did you ever watch the Breaking Down the Riff for her performance of PYT? Do you know Breaking Down the Riff, Natalie Weiss?
Oh, I know Natalie. Yeah, I got to watch that.
The amount of times I've watched that video to try to learn that riff. Jesus Christ.
Her riffs are insane. She is probably my favorite riffer of all time.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, incredible. And now my number 2 is Jennifer Hudson.
Yes!
I can't wait to see her as Aretha.
Yes, yes. I just think everything she sings is just so moving. And she had that album J-Hud, which I was just like, this isn't, like, that album didn't get enough love. Like, she had soul, she had disco, she had funk. She did it all. Jennifer Hudson, in my opinion, severely underrated. Mm-hmm. She's a great vocalist. And then my number 1 is kind of a basic pick. It's Ariana Grande.
Mm-hmm. Not basic, incredible. So that's a great pick.
I've been a fan of her since like 2009 or something. Like, she's just been on my radar for so long. And I used to listen to her YouTube covers for her amazing voice. And it's just like, look how far she's come. Like, it's been amazing. So that's my top 5. Sola, do you want to go next?
Got to get my shout outs in really quickly. You know, your Arethas, Mariahs, Whitneys, all the people that we're building upon now. Okay, my top 5. Your number 1 is my number 5, AJ. My number 5 is Ariana Grande.
Interesting.
I did this based on just like, whenever I listen to singers, if I can't do it, that makes me like love it more.
Yeah, me too.
So the top 5 can't do it by Sola.
Yeah, exactly. So number 4 is Yeba, just almost exclusively from her performance of My Mind. It literally has made me cry. And like, that's really hard for me. Like, I don't, for some reason, cry when I hear vocalists, but Yeba made me cry. Number 3 is Hayley Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She sings.
Yes. My number 2 is Beyonce.
Yes, 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 yes.
Obviously, like, just the fact that she can rap and sing so many different genres, like the vocal dexterity. Ugh, yes, Beyonce. So my number 1 is Layla Hathaway.
Yes, bitch.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Layla Hathaway, for anyone that doesn't know, go search her right now. She has the most ridiculous range, ridiculous vocals, just so rich and creamy and smooth. And yes, God. And she has a performance with Snarky Puppy where she literally harmonizes with herself.
Yes.
Yes. And when I saw that, I could not believe what was happening to like my body. I had like an out of body experience watching that, because what the hell?
Have you listened to her version of Sade's Cherish the Day?
No.
Okay. You need to listen as soon as we hang this up. She does this thing, which I just love all her choices on it. Oh, 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 oh. She is so incredibly tasty. There's so much air and wind in there. She's such an instrument.
Literally. And like, she can scat. She can do anything and make it sound cool.
I like when she goes, ah, Like, you know, she like moves the mic around.
Yes. We love it. Oh my God. I love her so much.
Guys, so I don't have them in order, but I'm going to throw out my top five right now. You know, of course, we're building upon, we understand that the GOATs of all time are Whitney, Mariah, Aretha. We're grateful, you know, yes. Anita, all these incredible divas. But I would say that in my top five exists Yeba, undoubtedly. I think she is so inspiring to me and so exciting. There's so much freedom, so much truth, and so much limitlessness. Mm. And Jasmine Sullivan is another one for me. And I have just been such a fan since I heard I'm in Love with Another Man. Tori Kelly, I've been in love with her voice from the moment I heard it. I think she's so talented. I think she's so important. I remember seeing one of her first shows that she did by herself at the Roxy, and Ron Fair coming up to me and being like, do you think I should sign her? And me being like, are you a fucking idiot? Yeah, of course you should. This is one of the most important artists of our generation. Yes. Do you see this? I was like yelling at her from the audience. I was like, you better sing! Just going crazy. I love her so much. Similarly, I love Ariana Grande. Tori is my friend. I have met Ari. I love her. I think she is such a cool person and a phenomenally gifted singer. I think her range is remarkable. And I just love the flexibility, the agility, the sensuality, the tone. I think it's all so beautiful.
Demi Lovato, Tori Kelly, Ariana Grande, and JoJo. That would be a perfect group.
I think that's a really good idea.
Vocals on vocals on vocals. And then when you collaborated with Tori Kelly, you know, I was like, this, you know, it's coming true.
And then my song with Demi. I don't know if you heard Lonely Hearts.
Exactly.
That remix is so nice when you guys harmonize over each other. Like, you actually re-recorded parts for that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like, that's honestly so rare that an artist, like, goes back into a song and re-records and, like, puts effort into the remix. Like, I was just like, great, beautiful.
Well, I love effort and I love intention. And thank you for noticing that. It was right in the middle of the pandemic. So unfortunately, we weren't in the same space getting to sing it together, but we made it feel as much like that as possible. And then let's see. One more. I would have to say.
And your number five is Sola. It's me. Thank you.
Yeah, Sola. That's what it was. Oh my God. Oh my God. Hold on. Jesse fucking J.
Yes.
Jesse J. Jesse J. I filled it in. Sorry. That's it.
But okay, those are our top five vocal powerhouses. So if you feel like you didn't have your favorite heard, let us know who your favorite vocal powerhouse is. So thank you so much, JoJo, for joining us. This has been so enlightening and so much fun.
This was awesome. I love talking with you guys.
Well, you're always invited back.
Okay.
And, you know, if I'm ever in Boston, maybe I'll hit you up. I'll take you to Richardson's or the Topsfield Fair. We'll see.
Yeah, and I need that clam chowder.
I love it.
It'll be the second time we've been at the Tosca Fair together, but at this time, we'll actually know each other.
Yes. Yeah, maybe this time you'll stay for my show, you fucking asshole.
Oh my gosh. It was a school night. You know what it is? I think your show was just, I couldn't get in because all the seats were full or something, but...
Oh, that's a good recovery. Thanks, Asian.
Yeah. Well, just because everyone wanted to see you. You were a big get for them, so.
Next time.
Next time, for sure.
So where can people find you, love you, listen to what you're doing?
You can find me at I Am JoJo. That's my Instagram. And then my website is something long and stupid, like I Am JoJo Official. But mostly just find me on social media. I'm actually really liking TikTok now. I'm figuring out like how to be myself and how to not feel like a weirdo on there. So that's cool. I am going to be on tour next year and maybe even popping up and doing a few things before the end of this year. So I'm really excited.
Beautiful. I mean, you know, in the fall, we have the album to look forward to.
Yeah, man.
What did you say the name of it was again?
I mean, I can't believe I'm saying it out loud because I said I was not going to, but here it is. It's going to be called Trying Not to Think About It.
Trying Not to Think About It.
Yeah.
You can find me at I Am Sola Music on all platforms. And what about you, AJ?
You can find me at AJ Marks Official. I made it real easy for you.
Oh, yes. And you can find Popheads at r/Popheads on Reddit. You can find Popheads on Instagram at Popheads Reddit and on Twitter at Popheads.
This was great, you guys. Thank you so much.